Welcome to the Women and Wealth Podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women and Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Today we're talking about technology and the future and seeing into the future. I don't know exactly what we're talking about. Esther, we're talking about technology in a way. How are we starting this podcast today?
Well, I live in Silicon Valley. I serve clients in Silicon Valley and those who have moved on from Silicon Valley who are in other parts of the country, but many people made their wealth here. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the job market here is very much focused on technology. And it's very rare that a few days go by where I don't see Waymo out test driving self-driving cars. Mm-hmm. We use different apps on our phones all the time for navigating roads and traffic and routes to get to work, wherever we're going. And this podcast was really inspired by a conversation I recently had with other financial planning professionals where we were talking shop. And I know often, obviously with technology, there's a lot of technology-based retirement planning, portfolio planning. And it made me wonder, there are so many different parameters to what we do. And I often get asked, you know, well, why don't I just use technology? Why would I need to spend on a professional? Mm-hmm. So when we were talking with my colleagues, talking shop, this is how we talk shop in the financial planning, financial advisory world. We were just sitting down saying, okay, what assumptions do you use for different things? And for example, and this may sound very snoozy for the listeners, I really hope not, but it's the kind of thing we talk about. What about rates of inflation? What, you know, we use for regular living expenses, we might use what we're assuming for inflation. And again, something like this is right now inflation's around 2%, maybe slightly lower. But when we're planning, we're typically planning 30, 40, sometimes 50 years out in the future. Mm-hmm. So we're used not the current inflation, maybe a little bit higher, but there's a different experience for expenses, for your regular expenses like your utilities and your food and your groceries, than perhaps something like medical expenses.
Yeah.
And those clients who have to pay private health insurance, they're not quite Medicare eligible, and we were looking for them to retire earlier than when they'd be Medicare eligible. Health insurance premiums, first of all, they're a lot more than what they perhaps were afforded through their employer. It's a lot more expensive. And the premiums are going up at a much faster rate than inflation. That's often a really critical issue for people in their planning. Mm-hmm. And long-term care, we're looking at long-term care needs. If we want to just run in some assumptions about what if you need long-term care, I mean, it's a high percentage of individuals. It's typically more women than men that need long-term care, because if one's in a married couple, a husband and wife, the woman typically takes care of the man longer, and men tend to pass away sooner. So what do we do about those assumptions there? We talk about that. And if you want, by the way, just as a PS, if you want any more information on long-term care, you might want to review episodes 13 and 14, where we go into that in depth. And if one is looking at college planning for their children, or maybe even for grandchildren, there's a different inflation rate for tuition. That's typically going up higher than that for room and board and books. So there's all these different sort of levers just in those regular expenses that most of us can expect to anticipate, with perhaps the exception of college expenses.
So are we talking about the difference between, when you're talking technology, I don't know if the term robo-advisor is still current, but is that what we're talking about, a robo-advisor or a, you know, do-it-yourself software kit that people are using? I mean, what are we looking at?
Well, I'm going to talk about both of those, actually. Right. I went ahead and Googled after we had this conversation where we continued to talk about, well, how do you do Social Security? How do you plan Social Security for someone who's in your office in their 40s versus someone who is 70 and already receiving Social Security? What about those people in between? What we do is we get the Social Security estimate and we typically plan for those in between that they would be entitled to 70% of the benefit that it says there. We're not making the assumption that they would get 100% over their lifetime. We just don't know what will happen with either Social Security or Medicare just because they're both underfunded programs that are a huge political football that nobody really wants to touch, and especially in our current political environment. And looking at things like safety nets, what do we do for disability and life insurance and emergency reserves? And none of these things, these are just a fraction of what we go over with clients. None of them addresses the emotion of the client. Mm-hmm. They're very different. It's not, I could put one 55-year-old woman next to another 55-year-old single woman, and they may have similar circumstances, but because of their experience in their past, their personal makeup, they're going to respond differently. I have some clients where I think they have too much life or long-term care insurance, and I appreciate both. And then I have others that resist my recommendations to obtain long-term care insurance, and I feel really concerned that they have a vulnerability that they haven't addressed in their future years. Mm-hmm. And so I went ahead after this conversation and I said, okay, I'm going to Google retirement plan calculators and just see what amount of these parameters are addressed for people. Because sure, I'd love it to be simpler also. This good planning requires certainly our technical expertise and as well as our engagement with the client. And it also requires the client to be engaged. And we have to answer and work through tough questions about what one thinks what they want for their future. I mean, it's something that most of us don't take a lot of time to really contemplate. Mm-hmm. We're here to help support them through that, but it does require work on the clients. And boy, it would be nice to just plug in a few things. And that's what I went ahead to do.
Well, you brought up a point that I didn't actually think about, and that's the emotion, right? That's the emotional piece. I thought more of the fact that they can't ask you questions about your future or what your kids are doing or possible grandkids. So just one scenario, if I've got kids and my daughter's getting married or my son is married and now they've told me that they're thinking about having children. Well, that's something that I'm considering. Okay. What do I want to do for that child education wise? Like you brought up college,
a robot
advisor, a piece of software is not going to be asking you questions like, so are your kids going to have babies? You know, they're not going to be asking those types of, you know, in-depth personal questions. How, you know, when you just have that relationship, Esther, you're asking, hey, how are the kids? Right. You know, their family. Oh, Johnny's fine. Johnny's doing great. Hey, he's, you know, as you know, he got married this last summer and they're already talking about kids. I'm really excited. Oh, well, that's something we should definitely talk about, because then maybe there's a college savings plan that you're going to be looking at, or, you know, what do you want to do for that child or that grandchild? I just don't think that a piece of software can do that.
Well, you know, what's interesting is they didn't, what I was asked to input was my age, my pre-tax income, mm-hmm. how much I've saved, and how much I'm saving monthly.
All right.
Didn't ask me whether I was married. Didn't ask me if I had kids or grandkids. I mean, just even asking, it didn't even go there.
Just the four things?
Just those four things.
So your age, your pre-tax income, what you already have in savings, and then your monthly savings.
Yes.
Fantastic. That's very thorough.
I was told in a flash, I mean, it was fabulous. Ta-da, I'm doing fine for my retirement.
I just heard that little, that Windows noise, I think is the ta-da. When you said ta-da, yeah, I could see that totally happening. Hey, you're fine.
Everything's great. Okay, good. Boom. Click that off and go on with the rest of my life. It didn't ask my gender, and research has shown that women often are required to take more time away from work for periods of time to care for family. That can lead to gaps in income.
Yep, true.
We talk about that with clients. I always say, do you have parents or siblings that you anticipate needing to have a level of support for? Mm-hmm. As I've talked about in other conversations, my mom is 94. She'll be 95. Well, by the time this is out, she will be 95 years old.
Nice.
And she needs more care. Her cognitive decline is happening. And it's the family needing to come together mm-hmm. to provide for her care. There isn't long-term care for her needs. And so what does that do? I'm having those conversations with my financial planner and allocating for that. It doesn't ask anything about expenses. And everyone has those larger expenses that come up regularly, like home maintenance, maybe remodeling, replacing your vehicles, mm-hmm. charitable intent, again, family support, travel. And the other thing that happens, especially in some ways it's easier working with a single woman who's gone through divorce or loss of a spouse or come into an inheritance or unexpected money, because they just have to share with me their thoughts. But when there's a couple, it's not unusual that one has different responses to things like how much mm-hmm. to, in your example, how much to provide for a child or grandchild's college or to support a family member. And neither is incorrect or correct. It's working out together what's a solution, hearing from one person, hearing from the other. Where can we just approach and build in something that works for both people?
I'll tell you what, Esther, you are preaching to the choir here, because my wife and I, we have grandbabies, and all of our friends, they look at my wife and they say, what happened to you? Where did the candy that we know, where did she go? Because my wife was very strict. And we raised a lot of kids through different things that we did.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the grandbabies, when you ask the question, you know, how much college should we pay for? She would say everything. just pay for it all. Let's buy them a house. Let's buy them a car too. You know, and I'm like, whoa, slow down. Oh, you want that candy kit? Let's get you some candy. We can get popcorn. I'm like, what happened to you? I love her to death, but these grandbabies, she has learned how to spoil small children, and she never did that before. So yeah, no, our answers would be completely different for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't love my grandkids, but I also know the value of allowing them to work for things. And I know my wife does too, but she really wants to spoil them. And God bless her. She needs to stop. Just a little bit. Just slow down a little bit.
It's done out of an enthusiastic, loving, excited place. Like, what a wonderful thing. And again, there's nothing wrong with either perspective. It's, well, gosh, can we provide, does this work? Does this allow for enough savings for your own retirement and future and safety net? Maybe we save and have it in your name and you decide later to distribute it out. Have some now, have some mm-hmm. later. There's so many different ways to skin the cat, so to speak. And I don't really like that phrase because I have cats, but there's so many different solutions out there.
Yeah. I just don't see a robo advisor or piece of software asking me, hey, has your wife gone bananas and is she spoiling the grandkids like you wouldn't believe? And, well, yes, I'll check that box. I just don't think that's one of the questions.
No. Or it could be saying, gosh, why are you such a tightwad? What's going on with you?
Exactly. Why are you such a Grinch? You should give more, give more. Yeah. These are your grandbabies. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
No, I just don't think that's going to happen.
Well, and the other thing, when I looked into the assumptions of my spending, how I was trying to see how did it come up with it, it assumed that I would spend 70% of my pre-retirement income, which I think is the biggest amount of hogwash ever been sold to retirement planning people.
Mm-hmm.
My experience is that work is actually a really good way to not buy things because you're working.
Yeah, you're busy. You don't have time to shop. Yeah.
You're getting your breakfast and lunch ready in the morning. You're going to the gym. You're taking care of your family. You're keeping your house clean. You're, you know, responding to emails, and you get home at night. You unpack the lunchbox. You go to sleep and do it all again. There's not that much time to be out and about purchasing things. So when people stop working, in my experience, again, I've had clients who stop working at age 50. It's not always 65 or 70.
Mm-hmm.
And that means a lot more awareness of all these things out there to buy, all these things out there to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or going back to the grandchildren theme, oh, I get to take my grandchildren here and there and have these experiences and take them on trips. And it's all wonderful stuff. but there's no way that there's a reduction. Maybe what goes down are taxes, typically, because that income isn't coming in the same way, mm-hmm. and also clothing. Those are the two things that typically go down, but what goes up is a lot more discretionary spending.
Absolutely. I've got a family member that will remain nameless. He's a wonderful man, but when he retired, he had way too much time to watch QVC. The Home Shopping Network was on a lot, and he started collecting watches. Beautiful, beautiful watches, mm-hmm. but we're talking some of them were $2,000 or $3,000 watches. I'm thinking, oh my, you know, this is not a good pattern. And it ended up being very detrimental to him. Before he was working, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day and exhausted and come home, watch a little bit of sports and that was about it. But you know, you're there at noon and hey, look at that. They're selling watches on TV.
And there's only 5 of them left.
Exactly. Act now. But wait, there's more, Esther. Sorry.
It's true. It's just there's ways to do it where the need is met, but then there's guardrails up.
Yep.
That can say, okay, if you go over, this is what you're putting at risk. Are you okay to put this at risk? I mean, it's the client's plan, mm-hmm. but are you okay with that? And often people are, okay, now I know where I'm at and what I can do and not. And then it's a constant review because life is always evolving and changing. So then from there, I said, okay, well, that was quick and easy, very limited. What about portfolio allocation? Mm-hmm. Let me go on to a robo site for portfolio allocation. And I typed in the answers to the 3 questions that they ask. Whole questions.
A whopping 3. Got it. What are they?
Are you retired?
All right.
What's your age? And what's your income? And done. That's it. And in a flash, I had not one, not two, but 3 portfolios. One for an emergency fund, one for retirement, and one for additional after tax savings.
Okay.
So it's really funny. I looked at the emergency fund one. And one of the things with an emergency, right? It's an emergency because you didn't anticipate it. Mm-hmm. And you do have emergency funds. I also like to call them opportunity funds because if something comes up, like, for example, the recession of 2008-09, mm-hmm. There were opportunities in that because manufacturers needed to move product and they weren't moving. So you might say, oh, this is a great opportunity to replace my vehicle at a lower price or to mm-hmm. book a trip or something like that. So it's emergencies and as well as opportunities. But one of the things is you can't time it. Can't time an emergency.
Correct.
When I looked at their recommended portfolio for the emergency fund, first of all, I thought it was way too small. It was like $15,000 to $20,000. Mm-hmm. But they didn't know my expenses. So, you know, they don't know.
Yeah.
And the other thing was it was 40% invested in stocks. So that's what they had recommended that I do with my emergency fund, that I'd be fine if I had $15,000 to $20,000 in reserve, but that it be 40% invested in stocks. And one of the things that I always say is do not invest in stocks at all if your time horizon is anything less than 5 years. In fact, ideally, it's leave them alone for 10 years. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. That was weird.
Yeah.
Because they didn't ask about my expenses, whether I had debt, family situation, just things that I ask clients to determine what amount of reserves I would recommend, as well as I also ask them, what amount are you comfortable with?
Yeah, it just doesn't, it really just boggles my mind. Are you retired? Yes or no? What's your age and what's your income? I mean, you could be living in a tent on somebody else's property for free and all your income's yours and they provide you food and everything else, but that's just not realistic. It's, you know, or you had a free house from something that's again, not realistic. You probably have a mortgage. You probably have, all sorts of different bills.
And as a single woman, there's no one else behind me who's going to cover those expenses.
Exactly.
That requires, for me, a higher level of reserves than it might be for a married couple.
Yeah, they didn't ask that either. You're right.
No, they didn't ask marital status on either the financial planning or the robo.
Oh, man. Yeah. Do you have 17 kids? Nothing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you have parents that you think you'll have to support?
Yes. That's another really, really good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So then I went to the retirement portfolio, and at first glance, the allocation seemed fine between stocks and bonds. It's kind of close to how I'm allocated now, 80% stock, 20% bond. But then I went under the hood, and the underlying investment that they recommended for stock and bond is very different than what I'm certainly how I'm invested and what I'm recommending for clients. They are very high on their international allocation of equity investment versus the United States. I certainly appreciate foreign investing, but right now I'm in the process of reducing the allocation to foreign in portfolios if it's not already reduced, just because we know Brexit is going on. There's challenges to the Eurozone. There is a slowing of economic growth. They're impacted by China and the trade issues. Mm-hmm. We are affected by a slowing economy also, but the U.S. has still got very strong foundation for growth. We're not dealing with the same impacts as Europe is. We're not exporting that much to China relative overall as compared to foreign. So those are a couple reasons that they were allocating. When I plugged in, okay, what about if I'm retired? I changed it. Like, I am retired. They were investing 15% to foreign developed market bonds, 20% to foreign stocks, and 11% to emerging markets debt, just things that I think are out of whack. I don't mind any of those three categories. Those three categories are in virtually all of my portfolios, but not to that level because of the current economic environment. In the U.S., the only exposure to U.S. equities was a index fund, and I know those are inexpensive, and I know the research that says, well, it's very hard to outperform the U.S. stock market. So it's cheaper just to have an index fund and to accept that performance. I don't mind indexes. A number of portfolios have some exposure to an index type, but we have to look at where we are now. 10 years ago, just about this time, 10 years ago, we were just digging out of the recession. Indexes were very low because of the challenge that had gone on during the financial crisis. Now we're 10 years later, and we're late in an economic expansion. Mm-hmm. And it does help to have some additional investment expertise on there to say, okay, which areas might we want to weight a little bit different given this environment, i.e. the Federal Reserve, as I talked about in the last podcast, indicated that they are not going to raise interest rates this year. Well, the best performing asset class in the first quarter of 2019 was actually real estate investment trusts because of the income that they generate. Clients who need income, we have to look away from the traditional bond portfolio because they just don't generate a lot of income. And there's other types of stocks that are solid companies that generate healthy amount of dividends that are taxed at a lower tax rate and are strong companies. So we're looking at things like that. And additionally, indexes are constructed in such a way, it concerns me to have everything in an index because typically the companies that are the largest ones take up a greater amount of representation in the index. So one's automatically, when you're adding to an index, allocating more of your investment to the biggest companies. So the top 10 of the S&P 500 right now are Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Alphabet, which is Google, Class A and C shares. The top 10 include those. So obviously a weighting in technology, which is fine, but technology is likely to continue to grow, but it's a narrow asset class. And the other four, if you're keeping track, are Berkshire Hathaway B, Johnson & Johnson, Exxon, JP Morgan Chase. So are these appropriate to invest in at this point in the economic cycle and just to continue to invest in as one would if it was just a robo? Again, certainly not bad companies, but what makes sense for me? What makes sense in this economic environment? How do I want to build the portfolio? I would not just use a U.S. large cap index for my U.S. exposure.
Yeah, I just, again, going back to the whole software robo, whatchamacallit, they can't, I don't know how they would possibly take any of this information into consideration, right? They're not watching constantly the news and finding out what's going on with trade and so on and so forth. I just don't see how they could possibly make a good decision based on any type of that kind of data input. But maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I could be wrong. I have no idea.
Well, I think what happens, I'm not necessarily a proponent of constantly watching the news for the individual either, because it gets very confusing as to, well, what do I do with this and what do I do with that?
Correct.
And it's very possible that you run simulations on a computer and it shows this portfolio would have responded this way over the last 10 years, 20, and yeah, I could have lived through that. The thing is that the economic environment does require, I mean, we've gone through some very fourth quarter of 2018, huge drops, huge point drops that are really unnerving. And the question is, can someone stick with the portfolio that they have? Can they navigate it during what goes on in their life, on in the economic world? And I'm concerned looking at that portfolio that it's not appropriate for the next 5 years. Maybe it would be fine if someone just put the money in and left it alone for 25 years, but that is a very rare human being, because even if they wanted to, maybe they're not able to because their life situation changes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Just life in general.
Yes. And so it made me concerned when I did that plug-in when I was retired. It showed a much different portfolio than I would suggest. Part of the reason that it wouldn't be what I would suggest is the income somebody might need when they're retired to supplement Social Security, their IRA required minimum distribution. It wouldn't be a very high income generating portfolio. They did a lot to bonds, but as I said, it was foreign developed market bonds, emerging market bonds, and some U.S. And one has to really look at, is that going to be adequate? It didn't ask anything about what level of income do you expect to need or do you need from your portfolio? And then we always look at where does a portfolio land on what's called the efficiency frontier, another technical term, but it's how much, it's basically the line of appropriateness for how much risk you're taking for the return you're getting.
Yeah.
So where is this on that picture? And what's their tax status? What's their volatility comfort? And are their plans changing? I have clients that I'm meeting with who are now, they've been retired for about 10 to 15 years. It's another stage of retirement. They're approaching late 70s, early 80s. And they're looking at moving into a retirement community. And we're looking at, well, how that will impact their expenses, because there's a monthly expense that's required. They don't have that where they're living right now. Yes, you sell their house, but then there is and in their case, there's not going to be any capital gains, it looks like, from selling their house, but a chunk of that asset is going to go to the retirement community. How much is left to provide the income support that they need? So changes go on as well. It's not just retirement. I mean, that's one of the things with this. Are you retired? Or are you not retired? Yeah. Okay. Even in retirement can last 35 years. A lot can happen during that period.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the takeaway from today's podcast?
Well, this works sometimes. I need to go take a walk because there. I would love to also just be able to plug in a few things and go, ta-da, here you are. And it's complex and it's involved and there's lots of moving parts. And so it's fine to do it. Maybe, I don't even know if it's fine to do a check and see where would I be. But I think what we bring in terms of value on the technical work and our ability to stick with clients wherever they are along their particular cycle and to make adjustments really create solutions that are steady and strong, regardless of what's going on in the markets, in the political world, in the global environment, so that clients can do what, you know, these robo things are set out to do in a way, to give assurance or to determine a plan. But these plans really work for people as their lives change so that they can move forward with the areas they need to and focus on and live fulfilling and confident lives.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thank you, Esther, so much for your time. I think this is a great podcast. I enjoyed it and you brought up some really good points.
Thank you, Eric. It's always a pleasure.
You bet. And thank you all for listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And here's the bottom line. You cannot possibly trade real intelligence for artificial intelligence. If you've got questions, reach out to Esther and her team. They're fantastic, and they'll actually have a conversation with you and ask you more than three questions. So yeah, it's a much better process. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.